Our next speaker is Professor Dick DeVoe. Dick was my statistics professor when I was at Wharton, and he was also a part-time stand-up comedian. I don't know if he's still doing that. But please, Dick, go ahead.
Thanks, Larry. So I've been asked to talk about three issues, kind of a statistical hodgepodge. I guess they're all the things that Larry didn't quite learn in that course. But I'm going to talk about models and what all these models of COVID, what they have in common, what their problems are, a little bit about uncertainty, and then finally the type 1 and type 2 error conundrum. So let me start with models. George Box is one of my mentors. He's a famous statistician, and he had two sayings that I love. The first is quite a famous one. He said, "All models are wrong, but some are useful." I'll get back to that in a minute. My preferred one from his is he said, "Statisticians, like artists, have the bad habit of falling in love with their models." And I think that's what you see. Certainly, it's rampant in the economics profession. It's rampant all over the place. But it's important to remember that models simply aren't reality. Some of them are very accurate, and others are almost pure fantasy. It turns out physical phenomena are, of course, much more predictable than social or economic phenomena. So, and Jacob just talked about the uncertainty in medical models, which is, you know, you think that's close to a physical model, but we have a lot of uncertainty there. I'm thinking about two kinds of models. Growing up, when I was a kid, weather forecasts were pretty bad. You really couldn't trust a weather forecast to know whether to take your umbrella out in the day. And they've gotten, in the last 40 or 50 years, incredibly more accurate. And the reason for that is two things. It's massive amounts of data and really complicated models that are based on physics. On the other hand, we still have econometric models. One of my favorite quotes was from the head of Wharton Econometrics. I'm afraid I don't remember his name, but he was once asked, how can his forecasts be so bad all the time? How can they be wrong all the time? And he said, quote, "My job isn't to make forecasts. My job is to sell forecasts." So this is the problem with models. They can be useful, but they depend enormously on the data that we have and on parameters. There's been a lot of talk about the transmission rate, R. If we just knew what R was, we'd know a lot more about what flattening the curve can mean. And recently, two researchers at Stanford, Susan Holmes and Claire Dunnett, have looked at R and have postulated that R is just not the same worldwide. It's kind of a ridiculous assumption to think that the transmission rate in a country, let's say like Japan, where people culturally social distance themselves normally, compared to a country like Italy, where people greet each other with hugs and kisses. So they have started putting in local R's and gotten a lot more accurate results. So all of these models can be useful, but they're really based on lots of assumptions and lots of things we just don't know. And the main thing that about these models is that we have to deal with uncertainty. And Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winner, and his colleague Amos Tversky, show that people are just incredibly bad at probability, and people mix up conditional probabilities. They mix up probability of A given B with the probability of B given A. So the probability that I test positive if I have a disease might be very high, but that's not the same as the probability that I have a disease given that I've tested positive, which we'll come back to in a minute. But let's just talk about risks for a minute, because I want to get to Larry's question about whether his parents should drive or fly from Florida to Chicago these days. So the National Safety Council keeps track of all sorts of odds of dying lifetime, which is a fun thing to go look at. The probability of dying in a motor vehicle crash in your lifetime is about 1 in 100. There's about 1 death per 100 million miles of highway travel. And that compares to about a third of a chance of an accident in an airplane per 100 million miles, none of which were fatal in 2015. So what that boils down to is the probability of dying in a plane crash lifetime is so small you can't even calculate it. If you include private airplanes and air taxis, it's about 1 in 10,000. And the probability from dying from choking on food is about 3 times greater. So normally I would say, yeah, it's much safer for your parents to drive from Florida to Chicago than to fly. But this isn't normal. This is, as they say, the new normal. But so what do we have to estimate now? I'm going to say that the probability that they're going to die from a crash is going to be negligible. But what about the probability that they catch COVID on it? So to make these two things equal, so the probability that they die going from Florida to Chicago is going to be about 1 in 10,000 for that flight. So if we say that the death rate from COVID is about 5%, then we'd have to think that the chance of getting COVID on board that flight is less than 1 out of 4,000 to make those equal. So I'm going to leave that back to you, Larry, to decide whether you think what the chances are of getting contaminated on the plane.
All right, I'll work that out.
So before I get cut off, let's talk about this article in the New York Times recently that postulated the following. It said, suppose a test is 90% effective for COVID. That is, it has 10% false positives. And so you think that if you tested positive, you'd have about a 90% chance of actually having the disease. But that's not quite right. Here's the way I look at it. Suppose that we test just about 1 million people. And let's suppose that the test is accurate in that if you have the disease, it will show you as positive. So if we assume that 5% of all people have the disease, which might be high, then there'll be about 50,000 people with the disease, and they'll all test positive. But there are also 10% false positives, and that's the problem. So that's about 100,000 people who do not have the disease, but who have a positive test. So now you're sitting there with a positive test, and you say, what are my chances? Well, you're one of 150,000 out of this million that tested positive, but only 1/3 of those actually have the disease. So that's how the Times came up with the statement that nearly 70% chance of not having the disease. I think what confuses people is, how can a test be that bad? If you have it, it seems like it should. If you don't have it, it seems like it shouldn't show. But that's a biological question. I'm not going to attempt to answer that one.
Okay, great.